Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, sports fans. Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown live show. Coming at you this morning from, as always, in here in L.A. We got Combo with us. And, you know, in fact, we are going to bring Ben on in a minute, but I realized that he's still on the screen. So let's bring Ben on right now because we might as well have this all a big happy family. So welcome, Combo. How's it going real quick?
All is well.
Good.
How are you?
I am good. Ben Ritholtz, how are you from Nick's Film School? Great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Coach. Everything is great over here. Excited to get into it.
Perfect. Well, you know, aside from the, this is live and we always have interesting ways to start our show. This is as good as any. So let's get right into it because, Ben, I wanted you to come on the show to discuss the Knicks and the Pacers second round. Very exciting to have these two guys, these two teams battling it out for the first time in a little while. I suppose from the Knicks' point of view, what do you think is the biggest key to the series and them winning?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not going to surprise anybody that I think the offensive glass is going to be key. The Pacers, not a good defensive rebounding team all year long. The Knicks, of course, pretty dominant on that end. And even the Sixers, who weren't a good defensive rebounding team but have Joel Embiid down there, struggled to maintain their box outs over the course of those games. Fourth quarters, often the Knicks started to kind of wear them down and get to the offensive glass. If the Knicks can dominate that portion of the game, Could be big trouble for Indiana.
Combo, what do you think?
I think the key for the Knicks is slowing down this Pacers offense, even though the offense has slowed down in the playoffs a little bit already. But, you know, the Pacers have the type of moderate offense where it's like quick hitting buckets before the defense even gets set. And it's going to be interesting to see how Tibbs has this defense going in terms of slowing them down. Are they going to pick them up early? Like, how are they going to defend this team and how will it be different than what they did against the Sixers? What do you think, Ben?
No, it's a good point. And the way those two points are related too, right, is can the Knicks attack the offensive glass with the ferocity they always do while still maintaining their transition defense, the integrity of their transition defense? If they send Josh Hart crashing in and let's say Tyrese Halliburton's guarding Josh Hart, now Tyrese is going 4-on-3 back the other way if the Pacers do secure the rebound. So those two points are related, and that's going to be a real battleground to me is, can the Knicks commit to the offensive glass? Can the Pacers get any rebounds? And if they do get those rebounds, how do the Knicks get back? Can they contain the fast-paced Indiana offense?
Who do you think should start out on Miles Turner? And do you think there's anybody that could guard a stretch big like him on the Knicks?
Yeah, I think Tibbs likes to start traditional. I think he will start Hartenstein on Turner, and I think the Embiid experience hopefully gave them some different looks they can throw at that pick and pop, whether it's sending, you know, bringing in the weak side to guard the pop, whether it's Veer switching with the guard back out onto Miles Turner. I think they'll start with those sorts of strategies. If Turner starts to really hurt them, I could see them making that swap that Milwaukee made early in the series, right, which would be putting Hartenstein on Siakam and having maybe OG Anunoby on Turner, even Josh Hart on Turner, that kind of thing, to try to muck up that pick and pop attack.
Wow. Well, that's why we have you here, Ben. That's really great insight into how they're going to match up. I also am worried about the fast breaking because obviously the Pacers were, I believe they were third in transition frequency, and they were like maybe sixth in points per possession. So they're good. They're very good in transition. It was surprising to me, and maybe you can give us a little more insight into why the Knicks aren't better in the regular season, at least, in defending the fast break. It looked like they were giving up a high frequency and then not defending it, you know, more than about average. So that seems strange to me for a Tibbs team. What do you think is going to happen on that end, and why that's been occurring all year long?
Yeah, I haven't looked at the numbers of late. I do think that improved once Julius Randle was out of the picture. Julius Randle, for all of his strengths, is a, at times, lazy, unwilling transition defender in terms of getting back. So I do think the numbers improved once he went out. But I think it goes back to what we were talking about, right? The way they commit to the offensive glass. I think does leave them vulnerable at times to opposing transition. And the last thing I'll say on it is Jalen Brunson being the first guy back often. He's barely 6 feet tall, right? So if a guy is out and other teams often have length on him on wings. So whether it's now a wing getting out and being able to seal him deep or just in general, having him as the first line of defense is not ideal, right? So when Jalen Brunson's your first transition defender, that can leave you in some vulnerable situations.
I have a Julius Randle based question. How do you feel, Ben, that his absence has changed the title chances for the Knicks either way?
It's funny. It's matchup dependent to me. Like this matchup would concern me if Julius Randle was around because the things that Indiana does really well are things that Julius Randle struggles with. We talked about the transition defense, even just a quick processing defensively, the way that Indiana goes action to action to action so quickly, I think quicker than any other team. Julius struggles to kind of stay with those types of quick actions. I think he might struggle with the ghost screening that Indiana throws at you. Historically, those are things that Julius has really struggled with. But in terms of like an offensive ceiling, what the Knicks are asking Jalen Brunson to do on a nightly basis, and Coach Nick, I know you've detailed it, he keeps doing it, which is frankly unbelievable that he's able to still sustain his, for the most part, his efficiency. I mean, even though obviously with this kind of load, it's going to decrease a bit, but he's maintained his effectiveness despite the crazy offensive load he's carrying. It would really surprise me if the Knicks can, like, if they get past this round and they go to Boston, if he's their only creator, their only offensive creator, I think that is too much to ask of a 6 foot guard to really get you to the promised land. They would have needed Julius Randle's secondary creation to at least have enough offensive upside to beat a team like a Boston, for example.
Well, you know, both you and Combo said that a lot about how they needed that secondary creator. And I want to agree, but as a coach, I want to believe that you can as a team, and the way they're fashioning their defense. And then, you know, listen, the offense is functioning. And, you know, it almost ends up being like you need someone who can really devise a better game plan to get the ball out of Brunson's hands more often. You know, Rick Carlisle should be in that conversation for someone who can sit down and do that, because it didn't feel like that was happening well enough. I mean, I know you're on the Knicks side, but were you a little bit like scratching your head a little bit about how they ended up approaching the defensive concepts against Brunson?
The Pacers or the Sixers?
Sorry, the Sixers.
Yeah. Man, the Knicks have gotten pretty good at dealing with those kinds of traps. And I think that's why Nick Nurse wanted to stay away from it is, you know, there's now more shooting on the floor for New York with DiVincenzo and OG, right? When Randle being out, what it does allow is for you to have more spacers on the floor. Randle's an okay shooter, but he's not a very good one. We have OG in the corner, DiVincenzo in the corner, Deuce McBride, when he's in the game, a very high level shooter. And Josh Hart and Isaiah Hartenstein are both very good going downhill in that short roll situation. So if you do trap and the Knicks use Hartenstein or Hart as screeners, the Knicks have gotten really good at breaking that down. And you're just kind of giving the Knicks an advantage instead of forcing Brunson to create one. I think that's why Nurse stayed away from it. Also, I think just having Joel Embiid at, I don't know what percentage you guys thought he was at. I would say 65, 70% of himself.
Yeah.
Asking him to come out and trap a 1-5 pick and roll and then get back to the rim, I think was probably just asking too much. And maybe Nurse would have done a little bit more of it had he had a fully healthy Joel Embiid.
And in Nurse's defense, what they also were doing was Joel would just zone and then have somebody else go up and deal with a pick and roll, which is really the way every team should be doing that on every pick and roll, right? Like, why would you want your center to have to go up there if they don't have to? And we're seeing it now in the Denver series with Minnesota doing some really interesting stuff. So it is fascinating. I think that's the next frontier that we've finally gotten out of the box with defending pick and rolls, you know, at least differently. So here's my thing. I think the key could very well be TJ McConnell. You throw him out there, and it was weird because I was looking at the numbers and he didn't really shoot that well, but it's just like whenever you kind of look at the game and when they're going on runs, it just felt like in the first round, TJ McConnell was a guy who was completely igniting their offense and going faster than anybody else wants to go. And their offense moving as well, better than when it didn't. So some of those big runs that would end the games were when he was out there. So, but again, this is a different, I think it's fair to say, right? This will be a completely different defense they're going to have to, they're facing in the Knicks versus what they faced against Philly.
Yeah, I mean, Knicks fans know TJ McConnell is a historic Knicks killer. So he is playing at a very high level. I think a whole second half of the year he's been fantastic for Indiana. And he's for years now been a thorn in the Knicks' side coming off the bench, whether it was in Philadelphia or Indiana. What he allows them to do also is, like, we know how fast-paced Halliburton plays, right? And but even when Halliburton sits, the bench unit is McConnell and Obi Toppin. Those, I mean, McConnell's a jitterbug. He's always going. Obi Toppin's one of the fastest players, as Knicks fans know well, one of the fastest players in transition in the entire league. So the pace doesn't lessen when those guys come in the game. So it's really 48 minutes of this hard-hitting, intense, pace-filled offense for the Pacers. I agree with you. And Deuce McBride, who in previous Knicks matchups guarded McConnell when he was off the bench, McConnell killed him with his pull-up game. Deuce could not guard him. So I'll be interested to see as well. And I don't know, Combo, what do you think about this? But, like, with that bench unit, who actually guards McConnell? How do they keep him out of the paint from kind of wreaking havoc?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could give him some Josh Hart minutes, right, if it gets too crazy.
Yeah.
But the bigger thing out of all this, Ben, I believe, is how well Pascal Siakam has been playing. Because he's actually been Indiana's best player. As good as Tyrese Halliburton's been, I think there's somewhat of an injury going on. I don't know if it's a hamstring, yeah. But he hasn't been great since he's the in-season tournament when he was playing like an MVP candidate. Yeah. Who do you think is best for TJ McConnell? But not only TJ McConnell, who do you think could slow down Pascal?
Yeah, I think the Knicks will throw OG at him to start. And I think there's been some debate whether it's OG on Halliburton or OG on Siakam. To me, if you can eliminate that pressure point, right? Because, like, if OG is guarding Siakam, you're not really going to send much help. Like, you're going to allow OG to take that matchup. You don't have to compromise your defense now when they're one-on-one. You have enough to deal with the Halliburton pick and rolls. Like, I think sticking OG on Siakam and just eliminating that pressure point, I think is really would be the wise strategy, at least to start the series. And then if there's a staggering situation where Siakam sits, but Halliburton's still in the game, and OG's in, I think they'll slide OG over to Halliburton. But as long as Siakam and OG are sharing the floor, I imagine that'll be the matchup.
And I'm really looking forward to that. I would love the idea that they're former teammates and they can
win games.
But what you said earlier about if they have to deal with OG guarding Turner, that kind of almost bums me out, because now we don't get that as much. And it will probably end up being a real problem for Tibbs to have to figure out how to make that work, because – like, it just seems like, okay, if OG ends up guarding Turner and is out there, I'm trying to figure out, like, it feels in my mind's eye that could be problematic on the second or third pass. Why? What am I missing here?
Is there ever a second or third pass with the Pacers?
Oh, yeah.
They just get shots up quick, too, even though it slowed down a little bit.
Yeah.
They move it quick. There is passing involved. It's just really quick passing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And will Nembhard continue to play this way? He's been playing really well, aggressive, better than he has. Huge bump in minutes in the first round. And that's another question. This is a whole other thing, right? I think we can all agree. When you go from the first round, second round becomes even more of a pressure-filled situation for guys that might not have had that kind of experience. So, all right, as we wrap this up with Ben, what do you think, Ben? What's your take? What's the outcome of the series going to be?
I am not one to be overconfident about the Knicks. I've usually downplayed their playoff success, but I really like this matchup. And I have Knicks in five in this one. I think they're going to win.
Because of the physicality?
Yeah, I think if I was getting, like you said, a combo, if you're getting Halliburton from the first, 30 games of this year, who was one of the best players in the league, I would get it. The way he's played, I think, again, they can eliminate the Siakam pressure point for the most part. If he can't carry that offense, I don't think Indiana has really the tools or the size or the physicality to deal with the Knicks attack. And that's kind of where I see the series going.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Combo, are you in on that or not?
I'll say Knicks in six. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Ben, for coming on. Make sure everybody out there follows him at Ben Ritholtz NBA. And wait, is that your thing?
I guess. Yeah, it's right. It's right. You're right. You got it. You nailed it.
All right. Anyway, never mind. It's on the screen. It's whatever. You'll find it. And again, Ben, thanks so much for coming on here for bringing this down for us. This was amazing.
Thanks, all. Thank you guys so much for having me. Enjoy the rest of the show.
You got it. See it.
Thank you.
All right. We're back. And all right. That was great. Thank you so much, Ben, for coming on and doing that. And it's really helpful a lot when you have someone who just follows the team religiously every minute, every second, every game.
100%.
A lot more nuance. And but, now that we're back and you and I, Combo, let's remind everybody, if they want to have their questions answered, the Super Chat's the way to go over on the YouTube side, if you're there. Anything else? I mean, we kind of encapsulated a lot of that stuff. I'm trying to think of anything else I wanted to make a point about. Fast breaks, transition, T.J. McConnell. The Miles Turner thing is a real cool, key here, right? He's scorching from three, and can he keep that up?
It's always interesting to see, like, the first game back from when teams are adjusting from their last series, who unlocks, right? And I think we're probably going to see it's going to be very different than the Sixers series, right? Because the Pacers play so different, and it's just going to be interesting to see what players for the Knicks could unlock in this series.
For sure. And, you know, I know you said, like, and they get the shots up quick in Indiana, but the ball does move quick as well and more. In fact, next time I'm going to look this up in a minute, but, like, as far as passes per game, I have to imagine the Pacers are so much beyond what the Philly had to be, like, one of the fewest passing teams in the league. Is that the right word? Fewest passing teams. The team that passed the least.
Yeah, can I see the league averages for both
I'll do for the regular season passes made. The number one was Indiana, 308 per game. So there you go. And then just for context, the Sixers were Philly was. Oh, actually, they were up there. I'm surprised. I kind of felt like with Joel, but they wouldn't have passed as much. The Sixers were 9th in the league in passes made in the regular season. Of course, that changes a lot when you get into another series. That's big. And then if they're 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th. So the 15th place team, kind of the average, the mean, it would be 283 per game. That's Utah Jazz. So that's what the 283 is the median or whatever that is. And then you can tell the Pacers are, 50 passes per game higher than – no, it's not, not 50. 83, 93, 03, 35 passes per game higher than the average. So it'll be different. It'll feel different without question based on what I saw in the first round from Philly's offense.
We didn't get your prediction.
Ooh. So my prediction, well, the Knicks have the home court advantage, and that's big. You know MSG. You know how rowdy that can get.
Oh, it's gonna be crazy. Oh man.
What do you think about those there's the Twitter account that will go after the game and just let the New York fans make idiots of themselves on the camera? Have you seen all those?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the videos. I didn't know it was coming from one account. I would assume that comes from a lot of accounts.
Oh, I thought it was like the one with the mic, whatever. But okay, but what do you think about those?
I think it's cool. I mean, it's good to see New York in a frenzy.
Yeah. Listen, highly entertaining. Absolutely. It does get a little borderline on some of the things you hear these guys say. The last one I'm thinking of, you hear what you know.
Oh, no. I didn't hear any of the.
The last guy and the last one that I saw, this, I think it was when they won the series, was. Wholly inappropriate, but, I suppose, by the way, did you see the roasting of Tom Brady last night?
No.
Do you know who Tom Brady is?
Yes.
I know who he is. So if I know, you must know him because I don't know anything about football.
Oh, Tom Brady. Yeah. I mean, everybody knows Tom Brady.
Anyhow. Netflix releases big thing. It's actually kind of interesting how they did it in Whenever Live. And I got to tell you, it's like, you know what roasts are like, right? You've seen them and how.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You sometimes laugh anyway, right? Like you laugh because you can't believe how horrible.
I mean, yeah. Comedy is meant to be inappropriate, right? There's no such thing as inappropriate in comedy.
Right. Listen, a lot of the older comics are now complaining that you can't be funny anymore because of the way people are.
Yeah, I think there's truth to that, don't you?
Well, it just makes you have to be more creative. That's all. You can make people laugh. You know, if you can't figure it out, then maybe this is not for you. Like, you know,
you don't go to a comedy show to see appropriate.
Right. But, you have to be able to figure out a way to do that now because, the audiences have changed. Anyway, this is a weird how we got into this. I have no idea. I guess it's my fault. I know how we got there because I'm on the Knicks fans after the games. So I haven't given you my prediction. So let's see here. I think I like Knicks and six. None of the Pacers have second round experience, do they?
No, but this whole playoffs is littered with young players, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we just finished.
I was actually thinking about this today. Like, what players are actually in their prime? What stars are actually in their prime left in the playoffs? Like, maybe Tatum and Brown, and that's it?
Well, I mean, we're not going to put Anthony Edwards in there? Or
No, prime. Anthony Edwards is not in his prime.
Oh, okay. He's not in his prime. Donovan Mitchell?
It's a good one.
You know? Now,
I mean, I think Anthony Edwards haven't even scratched his prime. Which is scary.
That's fair enough. I mean, listen, in my take, we kind of get a sense of who you're going to be after like your fourth year. I feel like it's like college, right? And then, so after you graduated college, your fourth year of the NBA, that's, I don't know how much more you're going to, even if you got in the league at 18 or whatever, and you're only 22, if you played 4 years in the pros and you played, you know, some amount of minutes in all those years, then I feel like we're getting closer to where they're going to be. Whether the age thing becomes the prime or not is, you know, changes for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I see what you're saying, but I think everybody's trajectory is different, you know.
Yeah, you can find outliers for that, I'm sure.
Sorry,
Malcolm. Pascal Siakam has a ring, and Brunson has been to the Western Conference. Didn't I say Indiana only? I thought I tried to make it Indiana. Didn't have
Pascal's in his prime.
Pascal's in his prime. Is he a star?
Yes.
Okay.
He's like an underrated, under-discussed star.
Is Pascal Siakam top 20?
Yeah, the way he's been playing this year. But yeah, you know, it's always I always mention Seth Partnow because he always says there's like 20 top 5 players, so maybe there's 40 top 20 players, you know, yeah, when you actually go through them. But I mean, he's been their best player.
Yeah, he has. I mean, he has. It's interesting. Right, because he's been able to bail them out a little bit on possessions where they kind of don't, the offense doesn't really work well. They can get it to him and he can just make a bucket.
He was a perfect fit, a guy that could get in the mid-range and get a bucket.
Yeah, so that's been really great to see. And again, I can't wait to watch that matchup between him and OG. So, but yeah, it just feels like the Knicks have more, that like maybe like they're deeper, right? I mean, I'm not even sure, like the Pacers, where's my Pacers tab? Gosh darn it all.
The physicality of the playoffs should benefit the Knicks, right?
Yeah. I mean, the Pacers had, let's see, 1, 2, 3, the starters. You know, it's like an 8-man rotation barely. By the way, Ben Shepherd, I want to make sure I give shouts out to him. I love his game. Have you been paying attention to him at all? I mean, on Indiana, he's really fast. Like the speed, he plays really fast. He can just stroke the ball from behind the arc. It's unbelievable like that. And quick, tough. It just seems like a tough, no-nonsense. Nothing's going to bother him. I think he's a 4-year player from Belmont. So this is the kind of thing where, all right, maybe the playoffs aren't going to be too much pressure for him. He's been in that situation. He's very well polished.
Yeah, he feels like a Heat guy, right? Like you find him from a place like Belmont, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And by the way, he should get more minutes. I think he's getting 17.
You know how Rick does it. He's not going to give like a player who hasn't proven 40 minutes usually, but we'll see.
Well, you know how many minutes TJ McConnell averaged in the last series?
How much?
You don't want to take a guess?
38. Probably more.
38. He doesn't start, so.
35. He played a lot.
18.
Oh, really?
I was shocked because it was like every time I was like, start watching, it's like he's there out there, he's playing. But unless NBA.com is wrong, I'm looking at this and it says he played 18 minutes a game in the
sixth. I felt like he was always on the floor.
But you know what? Let's look at his splits because I bet you maybe it changes. Like maybe he ended up playing the last three games a whole lot. Let me see here because it doesn't make sense. And I saw that and I was like, oh, this will be interesting. But let's dig deep a little bit more to make this more of a, you know, a regular show of mine where I'm busy trying to find stats while we're talking. So here's the minutes. It goes 18, 16, 15, 18, 16, 22.
Weird.
Weird, right? But he's that impactful that it kind of feels like he's played. You wanted to have him in 30. You wanted to have him in like a starter's minutes plus.
How many points did he average?
And you know what? He actually didn't even shoot that well. That was always weird. So here's TJ's line. 18 minutes, 9.5 points, 43.6% from the field, and like 25% from three. Doesn't take too many of those.
He's not really a shooter.
Yeah, and 4.5 assists. Doesn't turn the ball over. Where's his turnovers? Oh, that's weird. Why don't I see turnovers here? Oh, there they are. One. Yeah, one a game. So, but I got to tell you, it is an effect. He comes on there, and the ball just starts flying around. And he's flying around out there. He plays good defense. He's not going to be intimidated by this situation. So I feel like if they can get good play out of him, that'll be a really big boost to, like, you know, get a little bit deeper in the series. But I could probably see, I think, six, five or six probably. I don't know. You know, is Nembhard continue to play the way he's been playing and shooting as well as he has?
Maybe Tyrese could have a series, you know, you never know. Cause he came out strong that last game.
Yeah. So we don't know, like no one's saying anything about him being hurt.
No, but he hasn't been the same since that hammy, midway through the season.
Yeah. But like, it's weird because the hammy thing lingers and then it affects everything. And at some point though, I feel like it doesn't linger anymore. This seems a little bit long for a hamstring to be lingering, doesn't it?
No, because those are the type of, it's not like an ACL. Once it's fixed and you rehab, it's usually okay. Those soft tissue injuries could linger.
This is February.
Yeah. Those things linger. Like the soft tissue stuff lingers usually more than like the surgical repair of a ligament.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Like I'm almost like, to me, it's like it gets really, you finally just do it and it's gone. You can't play at all. Like, you know, or it heals, but you're right. Like it, all that can linger. I'm not going
to. Also like he's adjusting to having another star in his team.
You know, that too.
Could be part of it. Yeah.
That could very well be part of it. So interesting series. I cannot wait for it to start. We get to watch it. What, tonight? What time does the game start?
I believe 7:30, but I could be mistaken.
If you only had a way of checking that, let me check it here. But yes. So what else do we have to talk about? Do you want to mention anything about the game yesterday, game 7? It's at 7:30 your time.
I mean, Mitchell showed up, right? 39 points.
Yeah.
So
do you want to guess when they finally doubled him? What's that part of the game?
Fourth quarter.
Like 2 minutes to go, and then the game was pretty much over by that point.
Yeah.
But I was looking at this thinking, you know, it is hard because then you got Garland who can do create, and that it is hard if you want to get it out of his hands. But I think you got to take your chances with that, you know, because but Mitchell was walking to the basket. It was bad. They gave up way too easy points to him, too, on those. So I'm concerned. I feel like there needed to be better adjustments to that in that game 7 for them. But you know what? I'm sure the Magic are happy with that young team going 7 games in a tough first round playoff series. They showed some moxie. I guess we saw some stuff from Banchero, who, you know, some evidence that he can do that primary shot creator role really well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he averaged 29 this series, right?
Yeah. And I think he shot well from three, which is weird because I saw some moments when he was really struggling to score at all and like taking like what we consider bad shots. But then he goes out and does an in and out crossover spin fade away 15 footer, and that I'm like, oh, that looks good. That looks like it's supposed to look like. So yeah, and then Franz, you know, you got to chalk it up to, you know, he's young, right? Although, you know, I would have thought like the guys coming out of the European system who play in those pressure packed games from the time they're 13 or whatever, I would have thought that wouldn't have overcome him. So I don't know what it was, but yeah, Franz looked like he just could not buy a bucket for the life of him in that, you know, in that second, third quarter. So that was really rough, but now we move on, and so Cleveland gets to play the Celtics.
Yeah.
Should we talk about that for half a second?
Yeah, sure. What do you think about it? I mean, Porzingis isn't there. I guess that hurts the Celtics a little bit, but the Celtics will still be talented enough and good enough to beat this Cleveland team.
It'd be fun. News came out about KP, right? About when he's coming back.
Well, not this series, but I think for the one after, he could be back. Okay.
So he's out to the conference finals. Yeah, the Celtics can obviously beat them without him.
Yeah, I mean, but he makes the Celtics unique because he's the player that could do things that no other player on that Celtics team could do. And he was playing like their second best player at times during the course of the season. I think it's going to be tough if he's not 100% versus any West Coast team they play, if they get there.
Right. No, they're going to need him without question. Yeah. And what else are we going to say? About that. So yeah, so the Celtics, yeah, I mean, obviously the Celtics are an all-time great team. I mean, like what they did in the regular season, and they have a lot of weapons, they have a lot of ways to shut you down. We don't know about Jared Allen,
right that's another thing. I don't even know if that series goes 7, right, if Jared Allen's there.
I don't even think Allen gets him there. I mean, it's interesting because Cleveland then becomes a different team with you know, having as the anchor of their defense, which, you know, yeah, by the way, he was great. Like, you know, I feel bad that I brought up this notion of we should have a conversation about him. You know, the fact of the matter was in the video, like they got back in the series in games 3 and 4 by going at him. Whether that was a good idea or not, I don't know, but they were scoring on him. They came back and blew him out in 3 and 4. And, you know, listen, how many buckets are made in the game? 25 or 27, whatever. You know, it's 7 of them are against one player. Like, that's a high mark. Like, you know, and when you see, like, I'm telling you, like, Cole Anthony was like, come around, boom, he's on him, went right at him and like scored. It just felt like they were, that was a focus and it was working. But you definitely saw Evan Mobley, you know, especially in yesterday too, come up with some really big plays defensively and made him look bad. So he made me look bad, I suppose, for even bringing it up.
Okay. Well, how do you feel about him when he first came into league compared to now? Has your opinion changed? What was your opinion back then?
Oh. No, I mean, you know, my biggest problem with him is his offense. You know, I know he shoots a high percentage, but it's usually because of the shots he gets to take that are set up by somebody else. And I would love to see him continue to develop that. I think that that's still as raw as it was, maybe a little bit better, but not much.
When you have like Mitchell and Garland and even Caris LeVert, it's like you don't even need your big to do that much, right?
Yeah, but in the opportunities he does have, when I'm watching with a critical eye or as a coaching standpoint, like there's still issues, footwork, body, balance, touch, you know. But again, in game seven, I did see him make a couple of nice shots. I was like, oh, okay, like farther out than normal, a little touch under pressure. That was good.
It's funny because obviously Rudy is a totally different player, but Rudy feels like he has all those issues, but he's so impactful.
Yeah, well, if you watch the video, I broke down the video from game one, which was really a great game. Cannot wait for the series to continue.
Can I read you this tweet I had today?
Yeah.
It was kind of Anthony Edwards made me think of this. When a player's athletic profile is significantly higher than the level they are playing against, their ability to make shots improve. What do you think?
Say it again.
When a player's athletic profile is significantly higher than the level they are playing against, their ability to make shots improve, saying that if you're that much more athletic than everybody else on the court, even if you're not a great shooter, you'll become a better shooter because you could just get that lift. You could get easier shots off. It kind of reminds me like when I was playing overseas, right? And in the summers, I used to go to St. Francis College to play pickup. It's like a mid-major, low major D1. And when NBA guys would come who wouldn't be considered shooters, would make sometimes like 70 to 80% of their threes when we were playing pickup. Yeah. And I'm thinking it's like, cause everything's so much slower for them.
That right.
Right.
It's true. There's no question. And that happens at every level down. Right.
Yeah. So Anthony Edwards is the case where there is no level higher, but he's just at a different athletic profile. Even though he's not the greatest shooter, he can kind of just like get easy shots off.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and pickup is pickup. Like, you know, I'll see I remember like the 12th man on a Division I team goes and plays in a tough pickup game with the other good players and ends up, you know, just lighting it up consistently from
even if they're not considered like a shooter at the level they normally play at.
Absolutely. So, so that's something. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And the Rudy thing, just to put a cap on that one, I did a little bit of a segment on it for a couple minutes, was just like the focus on getting him the ball on short rolls is very strange to me. I don't know why they like to do it as much as they do. And I would just get rid of it altogether. There's enough gravity of him rolling that brings people around him and that opens up other things. And when he gets to the basket and you want to give it to him, okay, great, that's okay. But when they force a couple into him where he would have caught it at the elbow and then they got stolen. So it's like, you know, why are you trying to force it into Rudy? Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. And then one, he bobbled and then ended up being a three-pointer for Ant. Like, it was lucky. Right. But he bobbles those, you know, but in his defense, he did have another one where he caught it and he kind of awkwardly turned and he kind of made the right pass and they hit the shot like, OK, that was OK.
Yeah. Oh, the one to the top. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It was one to the top.
It looked like he had a glitch before he did it. Right.
Right. Bit. Right. And but the glitch might have been what you were responding to was he actually looked to the corner. That forced the defender to get way ahead of himself and start going that way so that when he threw it to the top where the defenders just would have been going easily,
but
they were out of position. So
that process might be a little smoother with other players, right?
Yeah. So maybe that's what I'm saying. And I just, you know, when it's not smooth like that, even though they made it happen and made it work a little bit, it gets me nervous as a coach. So I'm like, cut those out. And like, I gotta tell you, if that happens, like what else can they played perfectly. Like they played a perfect game. They had a perfect start. They hung on to some degree, and I don't think that the Nuggets are going to be – they missed some shots they would normally make. So I think that's going to change. You know the Gobert steal that he got on the lob?
I was about to say that. He was breaking up lobs because he knows Jokic's instinct is to pass, right? And he was breaking up some of those lobs. And I think for the Nuggets to win this next one, I think Jokic needs to look to score more. I know his numbers were good, but I think he needs to look to score even more because he could damage. He could punish all those players. Like there's nobody that could guard him on that team.
Right. I want to come back to this. Let's not forget this. I want to talk about Kat. I want to talk about Jokic and all that stuff. But we got some super chats to get to. So let's get to that. Alan Tran, best friend of the breakdown. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate you.
Great to see you as always. If the Magic can add one all-star level vet and maybe one to two productive vets, I can see them becoming the T-Wolves or the E's to be Ingram makes sense, I suppose. But what you're talking about adding was not, you don't do that in one off season, right? I don't think you can get an all-star level and a couple of productive vets all in one shot, right?
I think we've seen it before, right?
I know it's a lot. We've seen it when you've already had like two stars. And there's
look, I mean, what did the Suns, and it ended up terrible, but I mean, they added a star and they got Eric Gordon and Grayson Allen. I know Eric Gordon's, you might not say he's productive.
Oh, so you're saying that they did that. The Suns did that. Well, I guess, but they also had – how did they get Cade? No, they had Miles Bridges and the other guy I love from North Carolina. Oh, crap. What's – Cam?
Johnson.
Johnson.
Yeah. Do you like – I mean, Alan, thank you for the super chat. Do you think Brandon Ingram is – I kind of want guys that could, like, space around Paulo and Franz, right? Like, I know, like – Klay Thompson is a name that's in the zeitgeist for this Magic team, but like a player like Klay, right? Where they can defend a little and space the floor instead of a guy like B. Ingram that needs the basketball, because that's another guy that needs it with Paolo and Franz.
Right. So I guess you give Klay the minutes that like Fultz got?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think moving forward. I think Suggs is a good player and Fultz is a good player. I just don't like it around their two stars moving forward, because you want some guy that can catch and shoot.
So maybe you give, like, you know, Cole Anthony's minutes to Klay. That's probably an upgrade. Although Klay, you know, again, Klay is Klay, and he's, you know, he hasn't really been able to look like we were used to. And I don't know if that's going to happen again. But can he shoot 40% from three?
Yes.
Right. Can he defend? Like you said, you know, how well can Klay defend now these days? What do you think?
I would say average.
Average. All right. Let me just look at what was Cole Anthony's.
Also, he averaged like 19, 18, right? This year.
I mean, he's not. All right. So good. So Cole Anthony played, let me see. Cole Anthony played in 81 games in 22 minutes. So, yeah, could you upgrade that position? For sure, that would be an upgrade. So that would help. Ingram is a number three, you know, is where I think he's best, right?
But does he fit the role of a number three if the two other players need the basketball?
Right. Well, obviously Banchero and Wagner are the one and two, right? I mean, although he would probably think you're right. How would that fit? And would he like become an issue? Would that break up the whatever is going on? That said, I'm not even sure the way they ran their offense in the playoffs, at least, was really frustrating for me for the Magic in a way that like they're not maximizing both of those stars and the gravity and all those different things together. And
that's what I'm saying. The gravity. Does Brandon Ingram, I don't know if he really gives you gravity. He's not going to give you like quick hitting threes. He kind of like wants the ball, get into a mid range, get a bucket up, which Paulo is doing a lot of already.
Yeah. So it is, but it could be redundant. So they would probably need a different, you know, from a different, another position upgrade.
Yeah.
Like who's their point guard?
Oh, Jalen Suggs and Fultz.
Yeah, so that's Jalen Suggs could move over to a shooting guard. They would benefit from a better point guard. You know what I mean? I don't think Suggs is really that guy necessarily who could do
what,
that.
What's a point guard anymore?
Do you even not that you mean like Chris Paul, but they could probably find something there to upgrade or adjust, and they will. I'm sure they will, but I don't know if it'll happen next year. It might be the year after when they finally get the pieces in place. But great question, Alan. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alan.
We have Isaiah. Thank you so much, Isaiah. Really, really appreciate this. Do you like Trae Young on the Orlando Magic? So this is, I didn't even have seen this question before I brought it up, but you know, suddenly now that's the kind of player that you're talking about, right?
Yeah. I like that. I also think Orlando Magic is already good on defense. So it cleans up some of what Trae is deficient in. Right. And I like it. I like it for the Magic. I like it for the Spurs. I like it for the Lakers. I like Trae Young in general. I think he's underappreciated at this point.
If Trae Young goes to the Magic and with those, you know, the main guys still staying, is that the best team he's been on in the NBA?
I mean, he's made it to Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA.
He did. John Collins and who else was on that team? Hunter, DeAndre Hunter. And then
I do think, though, that Paulo and Franz will have to change their role slightly.
For sure. But then remember, unless we've forgotten, Trey's an excellent passer as well. But excellent. I like Trae. I mean, I think that might be. I think Trae Young has suffered as much from like, you know, a rough roster around him as much as he has his own game. Which there are issues with his game. There are some problems. Shot selection sometimes, I guess, is the big one. But he might feel like he's got to take some of those shots a lot of the time because of the roster around him. And if he was on a team that was better like that and better suited for him, he would improve.
You don't become Ice Trae by being gun shy, Coach Nick.
That's right. You can't miss the shots you don't take. You can't make the shots.
Oh yeah. I got a poster that says that somewhere.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Isaiah, you know, a good call. I think that would work. So what's the story with Trae Young? I haven't heard. Are they going to get rid of him?
No, they didn't say that officially, but I think everybody thinks he needs to change the scenery, right? And probably Atlanta wants to move on as well. Looks like they're going to move on with DeJounte, but they haven't said officially they're trading Trae Young.
I don't think that they would. I don't know why you would, but I mean, if you did, like, how would the Magic even get him? They'd have to trade Suggs.
I mean, right? and more, right?
I mean, yeah, but Suggs would be part of that. Which, you know what, if you could switch Suggs for Trae Young, I think you should do that. You know, and then you have
Suggs and DeJounte is a nice defensive backcourt, right?
Yeah, for sure.
He's been shooting it a little bit better.
So it's like a first Jalen Suggs. That's probably not enough. So I don't know what you do, how you get that to make that work.
One of the bigs, Wendell Carter.
Yeah, I like how he's been playing.
He's great. Maybe Isaac.
Yeah, it'll probably have to be like Isaac.
They'd want Wendell over Isaac.
But I don't know if Isaac has that much. You know, he came
That's
back.
That's what I'm saying.
Good, but
that's what I'm saying. The Hawks would want Wendell over Isaac, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh shit. Oh, I just swore. You know what? I just realized something.
What?
I was supposed to do an interview. Wait. You know what? Sometimes I get screwed up with the time. Oh no, I'm good. I'm sorry. I have a podcast from my I just got a text from my podcast partner on the political podcast side. And I panicked because I remember we were doing one today earlier than normal, but it's still 12:30 my time. It's only 10:45. So live insight into my head. Forgive me, but yeah, I just want to make sure he's texting me. Okay, so all right, so that's good. So we got a Trae Young destination. So, but again, I don't think the Magic. I don't know if the Magic can pull that off. But if they have enough assets, that's the problem. Yeah. Okay. Bron, best friend of the breakdown.
Thanks, Bron. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Feels like the Nuggets need their defense to fuel more mismatches on offense. And by mismatches, I mean getting Gobert on Jokic instead of him roaming. So thank you so much. Bron is in. He knows me well. He knows I needed to get back to this. So thank you for bringing this up again. Okay, so here's my – before we kind of dismantle, before we dissect what Bron had just said – there's a notion, obviously, that Cat is a better defender than Gobert when they're guarding Jokic in the post. And here's the thing I've noticed, because people want to say, you know, Rudy's hovering so he doesn't go. But I'm telling you, man, what it looks to me is that Jokic can back Rudy down under the basket when he wants to. But he cannot do that with Cat. Cat seems to be able to stand him up better.
Yeah, I think this is common knowledge, no?
Well, is it? What is Kat doing that seems to hold Jokic off from just
better
down under the basket?
Better processing and reflexes. I feel like Gobert just looks slow. Like, Gobert's a great shot blocker, great help side defender, but, you know, it feels like the processing in which Jokic plays at is just too much for Gobert. And then the footwork and the skill level.
Isn't it strength?
No. Not only, it's just a little part of it, I think.
So when Jokic,
I mean, Cat probably is stronger as well.
What?
I think Cat is stronger than Gobert as well, but I think I think he processes the game on both sides faster.
Okay. I mean, to me, it's like it's some sort of core and leg strength thing, and maybe there's, you know, maybe it's center of gravity as well.
Balance.
Jokic a little bit better. Like, you know, there's some physical thing happening there that when Jokic smashes into Cat, the pile does not move much. Where when he smashes into Gobert, it, you know, within three dribbles, he's got Gobert under the rim, you know, and he missed one on that one toward the end of the game. You remember Jokic point blank? And you could say that Rudy, like, got a hand up to contest, but, like, you know, we're talking about Jokic here. He doesn't miss that. And even the one when he throws the lob, you know, Jokic's runner is one of the best runners in the entire NBA and has been that way for years. And he shoots that all the time. So, and for him to make a mistake like that and shoot, throw the pass instead of shooting the runner when it was open like that is, I don't know. It's just weird to me. So I think it goes back to what you had said, which was he needs to be more of a scorer. And then with that in mindset, he's not even worrying about trying to lob it to Aaron Gordon. Right? Like, that's the key. We did see, though, and I didn't even put it in the video because I wanted to make sure we focused on the good stuff in the Minnesota Timberwolves, but we did see a number of times where Denver was feeling it out and found ways to get Rudy on him or to get Rudy away from being hovering around the basket. And I think I showed at least one of those at least. So I think, you know, I think Denver will start to more ruthlessly do that. They had an Aaron Gordon ball screen for Jokic I think they only did one of them, and it led to a score. So I think that's a really big one, is seeing Gordon screen for Jokic, forcing a switch. Now Gobert has to guard Jokic. And then once that starts happening, I don't know, Minnesota's going to have to figure something else out in a hurry.
Yeah, Jokic is going to drop 43 next game.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Ooh. So if you go on, use my code at Sleeper, pick the over for Jokic. And Mike, what is my code? I'll tell you. Because you know what? It's worth blasting out there. Do you play Daily Fantasy, by the way?
Yeah, my podcast is sponsored by Prize Picks, so I use Prize Picks.
Oh, Prize Picks, we used to be around here, but Sleeper is now BBall100 is my code. Use that code if you want. They'll match your deposit in the beginning. But yeah, it's fun. It actually changes the kind of way, it changes the way you watch the game, right?
100%.
You know, 100%. And then all of a sudden it's like not even the result. It's like, will Cat get that third block or something like that?
Right.
Now it could also be considered, well, I don't know, not considered evil, but some people get frustrated by that whole thing. But I think that there's so much skill involved in that, because you really got to look at like who the defense is, you know, how many games have they played that week, you know,
the blowout factor. Like if a team's way better, that star might not be playing at the end of the game.
That's all so tough. But then again, if they're playing against a weaker team, they're going to get their numbers too. So that's another thing. Right. So again, it does prove that like when you're playing the daily fantasy stuff, so many things have to be computed that relate to skill of evaluation. So for sure, check that out. And then you know what? Put all together, you can win some money.
That is true.
And in this economy, we all need to figure out ways to make money.
What do you think about this OKC series?
The OKC series. I don't know. I mean, I think we're talking about experience and stuff like that. Like, they don't really have any.
Yeah, I think that that's what with Kyrie and Luke, even though Luke is a young player and the players around them, I think they're going to win that series with their experience. That's the first thing that comes to mind, that word, experience.
Now, Luka's all banged up, bleeding from the knee and whatnot, or whatever they're saying. You know, that's something to keep your eye on.
Eternal bleeding or external bleeding?
External bleeding. I think they're giving right injections then. And then I don't know, something weird like that. But that's been happening apparently for a lot of the season as they've been, you know, you get into injection, you might bleed a little bit, but nonetheless, he's getting injections, I suppose. And so that's, you know, it's not good. You don't want those when you're in the middle of playing a playoff series. Who guards Luka? How does that work?
Jalen Williams.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Lu Dort might guard Kyrie, but that won't be a good matchup for Lu Dort, right?
I don't know. Lu Dort, I mean, Lu Dort is going to – it'll be fascinating. You know what it'll be like? I'm not sure if it's like the Matrix, but it'll be like, you know, hand-to-hand combat, right? Like just constantly reaching whatever, and then Kyrie constantly, you know, moving the ball, manipulating it. It's going to be one of those kind of like, you know, coordinating.
Isn't he more of like I feel like that would be the matchup if it was like Matisse Thybulle, but I feel like Lu Dort's more sturdy, right?
Yeah, and he's just shorter, and you know, it is different in a way. And remember, Thybulle likes to let you go by him and play from behind, so it'll be a lot different. I think Dort's gonna be hyper aggressive. Now, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Dort, I'm sure will probably find some possessions on Luka. I just feel like that size thing is a problem, but you know, he could be a pest to that dribble and keep Luka having to guard the dribble better, and that might get him his back turn a little bit more.
I bet you they target Giddy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Giddy, you know, it's been pretty good defensively.
I mean, their whole team is good, so yeah. But I mean, that would be the guy to target, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, let's see. Okay, Luka's got the ball up top, and he's looking to who's going to screen for him.
Yeah, I mean, you're not probably targeting SGA, Jalen, or Dort. Chet on the perimeter, maybe. I don't know.
That's tough because Chet can move too. He's good. And he's long. Check
on an island on those two, though. I don't know.
It's interesting. It could be Giddy, or you know, and if not, like, yeah, then you just kind of run your offense and they'll throw Luka in the post more.
I don't think any of those guys could guard Luka in the post,
right? So they might end up having to do that, which I wouldn't be averse to. I had a nice back and forth on Twitter with somebody about how the post up is an inefficient play, and I had to kind of explain.
Kyrie in the post too is tough, he's very good in the post.
In fact, let's talk about that for a second, because I was gonna look this up and I forgot, but I'll continue to do my
Rick Carlisle said that about Porzingis when he was playing with Luka, but that's a totally different subject.
And I did a video on that too to prove that my friend Carlisle was not exactly accurate. And I think I've broken it down.
I think the days of like having a big man just standing down there and throwing the ball down to him for a post touch is probably not the best way to play basketball at this point. But when you're like a guard like Brunson who could weave in and out of post ups, I think it could be very efficient.
Well, here's the thing. Where is it? So Nikola Jokic is post ups. And the discussion we had about why like post ups are inefficient, you know, don't you know this kind of thing? Or I don't know. I mean, that's not his tone.
Yeah, I think a Jokic post up is good.
Right. And so I'm like, and he goes, you know, if somebody goes down there and scores on half the possessions, like that's just not efficient. I'm like, 1.0 points per possession is the number one half court offense for the Celtics this year. And they were 1.01 or 1.02. So now you're talking about 1.0 is horribly inefficient. Like that doesn't make any sense if you do a thing like that. Now, do you want to know what Jokic's points per possession is on his post-ups?
I would guess 1.2.
1.13.
Okay, close.
Again, that would probably lead the league in a half-court offense if that's what you ran all the time. Now, here's one thing I'm not factoring. You know what I'm not factoring?
Which it would go down if they ran that every time, but yeah.
Probably. Either way. I'm not factoring?
What?
I'm not factoring in passes.
Mm.
If you factor in passes, it goes up to 1.143, which is
a just giving him a post touch, basically.
Yeah. Now the other thing that you're factoring into, are you ready for this? Have you ever seen a post up player get really good position, get low, and miss the shot, but then get the rebound and put it right back in?
Yes.
So don't you think that that should be counted as part of the post up?
Definitely. I mean, that's why drives could be valuable as well, right? You attack the rim. Okay. Yeah.
Good. That's another good point. But you know, let's just focus on post ups. This happens maybe more than you think. And so if you were to include the putbacks, which I am sure in my mind's eye, I can already picture a number of those from Jokic, this 1.143 is at least 1.25, right? Or something like that. It goes up at least a point or a tenth. And so now you're talking about the most efficient play you could possibly run in the half court. And so if at least we're going to talk about Jokic specifically, you know, you cannot, with any credibility, say that that's not an efficient way to run your offense or to play. So I would think that they're going to do that more. I bet you they're going to try and get him down the post more. And you know, if you try and do the high post, it allows, Rudy to hover on the block and stuff, especially with Aaron Gordon, who doesn't shoot the ball well from the three, right? So either they do that or they go small and play him off the court. The problem is Denver doesn't have a big enough rotation to play small. I feel like, right? Like, let's look at their lineups real quick. This is a thing I should have thought about.
But I would also say, like, when it comes to the post-up, and Jokic is an anomaly, like, you want to get Jokic with post-ups more than probably any other big in the game, right? But I think balance matters, too, because while all you're saying is true, I don't know if giving your big post-touches is the best way to have everybody involved and be in flow for the sake of the offense in general.
Yeah.
So I think
Jokic, specifically Jokic, you know, cutters, movement, all that skip passes. It is happening, right? Like, right?
Yeah, yeah, for him, yeah. But like, I'm saying, like the Hakeem Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing post up.
I hear you. Listen, there's no one more progressive than I am when it comes to the game and how we can continue to evolve. So
am I out progressiving you?
You are, I guess. I mean, sometimes listen, there's some, they were pretty smart back then and they knew what they're doing. And this guy, certainly the way he plays it, it's not inefficient. That's the point. And that's where it's that whole conversation started. Like, I suppose if you wanted to pull out into a huge macro sense, yes, the post up with six dribbles in place and everyone standing around watching is not the best way to run an offense. But if you have a Jokic, you got to do it. So I'm looking at the top played lineups in this last series for the Nuggets. And then what I did was I did a search for the name Gordon to see, okay, what are the top things they played without Gordon in the lineup to figure out, are there some small ball here where you had, Jokic and not Gordon and small. But the most played lineup they had without Gordon in it, are you ready for this? It only played in two games of the six. It only played 9 minutes total. It was Reggie, Justin Holiday. Wait, Justin? Wait, it's Justin, right?
Justin.
KCP, Jokic, and MPJ. So that's MPJ playing the four. And by the way, they're going to have to find some ways to make that happen. Get MPJ playing the four a lot more.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
That net rating of that lineup, plus 30.6. Oh, that's pretty good. The next lineup they did was with Brown or Watson playing the power forward. You can, I guess, take your pick. Did not do well. But I think that's the key. And then after that, you're talking about, you know, almost no minutes for the rest of it. Let's switch it to the regular season real quick. Can we?
Yes, sir.
I'm just curious. Let's go there and really look. I'm going to take Gordon out of the equation. And so we got, you know what it is? We got to find the lineups when it's MPJ as the four. And that's not it. That's not it. And then you got a lot of lines without Murray because of his injury. So, but here, is this it? Here, KCP, Jokic, Murray, Michael Porter Jr., and Peyton Watson. There it is. 13 games, 64 minutes, plus 3.6. So it didn't even do that well. It played, you know, a number of minutes, but something like that. But I think it's, we need to get that. You have to have Murray, KCP, who did we say? Somebody, Michael Porter Jr. and Jokic. Who plays the three? I guess it's either Brown or Watson, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so there you go. Problem solved, Coach Malone. Just go do that. Find those players, and they'll win that series. Who do you think is going to win that series?
Oh, the Mavs.
Okay, I'm sorry, Nuggets.
Oh, the Nuggets.
Okay. You think the Nuggets are going to come back after being down 1-0?
Yes.
And you think the Mavs are going to beat the OKC in six games?
Six. I think Nuggets in six and Mavs in six.
Okay. Wow. Okay. And
it wouldn't be right of me to change my prediction now with the Nuggets. I wouldn't overreact to one game. What would that make me?
An overreactor.
Yeah.
Yeah. We certainly shouldn't overreact too much. You know, there's a lot of good stuff that the Nuggets can take from that. Knicks in six.
Yep.
And then Celtics in?
Five.
Five? You're going to give them a game?
Give them a game.
Okay. Yeah, gentlemen sweep.
Jalen Brown and Jason Tatum will be taking a whole bunch of tough top shots with their offense. And,
right. Lose a game. And then Derek White's going to shut down.
They think I'm a Celtic hater in the comments section, Coach Nick. They think I'm a Celtic hater. So maybe I should stick with that.
Yeah, just so like you've defended Tatum more than I do.
No.
No?
I don't like his game. Okay. Me personally. I mean, I think he's a great player. I just like the way some of the other stars play basketball better than him.
Yeah. Actually, that's right. You like Brown like I like Brown, I think.
Yeah. I think he's underrated and probably Tatum's slightly overrated.
And now Rudy Gobert is questionable for tonight's game due to his girlfriend being in labor. That's not break. Is that, I hope we're not breaking like fake news. Is that right, Mile 22? Yeah, and then Gobert ain't missing the game for the birth of his son. That experience is overrated. Shots fired. Were you there for the birth of your child?
Yeah, it's not overrated.
Yeah. It's hard to say. You know what? The loneliest person, loneliest moment a man could ever have, I would imagine, is sitting outside the room. Well, my wife had a C-section, so I had to sit outside the room, so we knew it was all happening. And you're by yourself for about 20 minutes, and there's no lonelier feeling than this.
I mean, there was no other family with you?
I don't think I could. I was like, it was the OR kind of setup, you know, where you're on scrubs and the whole thing.
Ah, got you.
All right, Dane Moore tweeted it. Well, that's Dane Moore's definitely.
My son stood up, so I had a different kind of experience. Like, he came out and just stood up. He's different.
Your son stood up on his own two legs?
Yeah, it was crazy.
Like, I don't believe you. Like, what? You're telling me that how would he have been able? Like, they're holding him, they're cutting the cord, they're doing the stuff, they're laying him down.
He just came out, stood up.
Where? What did he stand up on?
At least that's how I remember it.
You don't have a video of this?
No, I was in the moment, Coach Nick. I wasn't on the smartphone.
Oh, no. I mean, listen, my daughter, I had my PD-150, like my old mini DV camera going.
So oh, that's dope. Yeah, that's dope.
Yeah, I had high quality digital video.
Coach Nick was getting content, making sure everything was good with the content.
Yeah. I don't remember. Wait, I got the other one too as well, but maybe on a – did I use a phone? I don't remember that point. 2007? No, I don't even think I had a –
To change the conversation slightly – You know, it's all about the conversation here. I was going through podcasts, learning about how to build YouTube channels, and you came up. You were on somebody else's podcast.
Oh.
Yeah. It was good. It was good. I listened to the whole thing yesterday.
You know, what's funny is like, you know, it's been so long for me. I couldn't really give you any of the insight that I learned because I don't know what, you know, what I did then doesn't really.
It was an hour of insight.
Okay, so yeah. I mean, I'm sure we talked about some of the stuff and what I did, but I wonder how actionable any of that is today.
Dusty Porter was his name. Do you remember that? Dusty Porter's podcast.
Sure. That sounds right. That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing was, though, you said, yeah, we do live shows. And you didn't even mention me, Coach. Said, come on, man. You got to say Combo is my co-host.
Oh, forgive me. Did we talk about live shows very often? It was just a little
quick. No, very, very quick. Yeah. You were talking about, very quick, very quick.
All right. I'm sorry, Combo. I'll give you a shoulder pat. It's not that I'm not thinking of you. How about that?
All right. I'm just messing with you, man.
But at any rate, and then Mile 23 has an interesting way of spelling beat reporter. That changes the whole connotation of beat when it's spelled B-E-E-T.
Speaking of beats, who's winning? Drake or Kendrick?
Yeah, I don't understand. Can you give me can you explain it in like two sentences tops?
I love that we're getting a lot of music out of both of them, but it's a lot to comprehend right now. So, you know, Combo leads a busy life, so I have to listen to every track all the way through, and then I'll make my decision on who wins.
All right, so they each recorded the song.
No, they're constantly recording and constantly putting out music, and it's getting crazy. There's like, they can make a compilation album at this point.
But each song has a specific focus that's supposed to be insulting the other. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. It's getting personal, Coach Nick.
It's getting personal. So they're talking about their family members or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's getting crazy.
And so someone might win out of this between the two.
Yeah, I think consensus was Kendrick, but then Drake dropped last night, so we'll see what happens. I listened to every song at least once, but I feel like I have to go through it. Like, I need a detailed film study, if you will.
And is there any value to these songs, or are they simply just churning these out?
Oh, it's two of the it's hip-hop history, because it's two of the greatest rappers ever battling.
So they're good, the music's good, like, it's actually well thought out, they're not just
These guys are, like, lyrical geniuses, you know? Like, I know people say, like, Drake is not the most lyrical, but that guy can really rap, man, and obviously, Kendrick is lyrical and he can really rap as well. So, yeah, it's been interesting. People drop in the comment who you think won. Yeah, I want to see that.
Yeah, it's Kendrick Lamar versus Drake.
You know, I usually hide the chat, so I'll look at the chat for now. Let's see.
You hide the chat? That's kind of aggressive.
Well, you look at it and I feel like, you know.
You got it under control?
Yeah, all right. Oh, nobody's saying anything yet, so unless I'm slow.
Are we going to see another Tupac and Biggie situation endgame out of this? I would hope not.
Oh, I didn't see that. What's going on? Oh, the price.
That's the most recent comment. However, is this real beef?
Yeah, I mean, some of these are contrived because it helps both artists often, but I think this one's real.
You think it's real? You think they both, Kendrick?
We got two Kendricks already. So
and isn't Drake kind of like a dork?
He started out as an actor. He's a little bit nerdy, but I think he leans into that. Like, I don't think he tries to fake the funk with that.
Okay. All right. So he leans into being a little bit. Yeah. I don't know. I know a little bit of his music.
He's a funny dork.
Okay. I get the sense that he's not like the coolest of the cool people, but that's okay. You know, we all can't be as cool as you and I.
That is true. That is tough.
It is. I used to be, you know what? Actually, I used to kind of be in both camps, you know, growing up. So there was value to having, you know, the perspective on both sides. The hits on Kendrick are way more savage. You kind of feel bad for him.
I see what he's saying. But I mean, Drake fought
for Drake because of how savage it is from Kendrick.
Yeah. Well, could that be a loss if you feel like Kendrick is almost bullying him? That could be a loss in itself, right? If he looks like too much like a bully.
But you know what? It gets back to our, the roasting of Tom Brady kind of thing, right? Where it's like,
is this entertainment?
You have to go as far as you can on these and put the person out of his misery, I suppose. In that respect, it's like some of the things you heard in that roast of Tom Brady were, it's like, are we still insulting people for that kind of stuff? Like, it seems way out of bounds at this point. And B, it's like, is it really even funny? And, you know, then you might, you know, the crowd is laughing heartily and you might chuckle or like, you know, in that shocked way. But it's interesting where we're moving towards in all of this.
Yeah. We got three Kendricks already and no Drake. So maybe Kendrick's winning.
I mean, honestly, without even having any idea what's going on, and I can kind of see something on Twitter, I think this week I'm going to just get off of Twitter for a lot longer than I normally am. But it's even me feels like somehow Kendrick was winning. Lamar was
okay.
Anyway, but
when you check the temperature, you saw Kendrick winning.
It's just in my mind as it's swirling around, but you know, without me, it's something about his name standing out to me that like
he was. Well, have you been on Twitter late last night or early this morning much?
Probably, you know, I mean, a little bit, but not, you know, not, I don't know if I'm in my timeline there's looking at my mentions and whatnot, but that's the key. I'm going to stop checking my mentions for a little while.
So in the title of this, when you make it a podcast, you could put Knicks Pacers preview, the value of a post up and the Drake Kendrick battle.
Okay. It's a little, is that a little bit too wordy?
You know what? Like, who knows, man? Because sometimes the simple titles do good, and sometimes when you put all the topics of the titles, it does good. Who knows nowadays?
That's right. That's my dad's signature phrase is who knows.
Who knows? Especially with the
t-shirts to say who knows.
Especially with how the algorithms go these days. You never know.
Listen, amen. And you know what? I'm going to wear my who knows sweatshirt next time to show you that I have it. So, okay. Well, Combo, great show. It was awesome to have Ben here breaking stuff down to us as well. That was really insightful. I might try and get, well, I guess it's going to be over now. We're going to start the series, but Caitlin may have to come on for the Pacers side and get some breakdowns from her.
She's a really smart basketball mind. I actually never had a conversation with her, so that'd be fun.
Okay, I'll ask her if she wants to come on. Game one. All right, we'll get together maybe later this week.
Sounds good. Yeah, let's do one before Monday. I think there's going to be a lot of good games going on.
Yeah, and maybe you get some, take a nap, and maybe you'll be awake for do a post game show.
Ooh, now you're talking, Coach Nick. Let's try.
We could, but like, and there's a lot, you know. I just let you know, there's a lot more people there, but it's late, man, because we got to go after the second game.
How do we go in between the games? No way, huh? No time.
Well, I mean, we could, but you know, but we'll see. We'll play around with it a little bit, but you know, I'm telling you that the post game live shows are the way to go. So I'm going to probably do at least one. So.
It's lit. It's lit, huh?
Yeah, it's lit. Yeah, we got lots of ooze up in this chat.
What?
So,
all right. I'll see you soon, Coach Nick. Oh, are we done? We got more. What do we got? We're done.
We're done. It's on. We're already on. We're over. So anyway, thanks so much, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Combo, and all the Alan, Isaiah, and Bron. And don't forget, sports fans, at B-Ball Breakdown. We're not a channel. We're a conversation. Wow. I forgot what I was going to say. Are you in? Are you in, Combo?